Today's shiur is Masechta Bava Basra Daf Tzadiches. We will begin on Daf Tzadik Zayin Amud Beis at the Mishnah. Says the Mishnah, Mecha Yayin L'Chaveira, if somebody sells wine to someone else, V'Hichmetz, and the wine got sour. So says the Mishnah, Ein Chai B'Chriusoy, since when the wine was sold, it was fine, then the halacha is, the seller is not held responsible. However, says the Mishnah, when you do it, if it's known, Shayenoi Machmetz, that this person who sold the wine, his wine has a tendency of turning into vinegar, Harezim Ekhtos, then the seller has to return to the buyer the money that he paid for the wine, because this person had no intention to buy wine that becomes sour. The Yad Ramah points out, what does it mean when it says when you do a shiyenei machmetz? What makes it known that it's machmetz? So he says that throughout Shas, there's a machloikus of how many times does it take to achieve a chazaka, two or three times, machloikus Rebbe and Rav Shimon Gamliel, and whatever they will hold throughout Shas regarding how a chazaka is established, they will hold here as well that's the way a chazaka is established. However, continues the Yad Ramah to say, if the buyer was aware that this seller's wine has a tendency to get spoiled, and he bought the wine anyway, knowing that that's the case, so then, of course, the seller will not be held responsible, because the seller will say, you knew that this is what's likely to happen or possible to happen, and you accepted that upon yourself. Many Rishonim asked the question that we learned the Gemara on the Tzadik Vav that speaks about the situation where somebody sold wine to someone else and it became sour, and we spoke about if it happened in the first 3 days, it's the responsibility of the seller. Afterwards, it becomes the responsibility of the buyer. Our Mishnah teaches us that unless the case that we just mentioned is the case, that the seller is never held responsible. So Rashbam says that we're going to have to explain that our Mishnah is referring to a situation that's after 3 days from the wine was indeed sold. Another shot that, as we're going to learn in the Gemara, that a big consideration that the Gemara adds to this discussion is where did the wine get spoiled? Did it get spoiled in the property of in the kalim, in the barrels of the seller or the buyer? And the Gemara explains that if it happens in the cellar in the barrels of the buyer, that changes the entire conversation. And that's why our Mishnah is not the same as that Gemara. Or indeed, some Rishonim say that our Mishnah is not consistent with that halacha. So the Ritva explains that our Mishnah is referring to a situation that when it was bought, it was certainly wine. What happened here is that after it was bought and it was poured over into the buyer's barrels, that's when the issue becomes, as we said, and we're going to learn in the Gemara, because at that point, the concern is it's that pouring over into the buyer's vessels, buyer's barrels, that change the status of the wine. Vim amaloi. But if the seller said, Yayim mevusam, I'm selling you high quality wine which is going to be okay for a while, Yayim mevusam ani maichaloch, then the halach is chayv lahamaloi ad hatzeres. He has to give him wine that will last until Shavuos. Now here too, when we speak about wine that lasts till Shavuos, so the Rashbam explains, why is Shavuos the cutoff date? Because after Shavuos it gets hot, and after it gets hot, that could adversely affect the wine. And the Yad Ramah here too points out, it doesn't mean the first Shavuos after I bought the wine. It means the first Shavuos after the wine has been manufactured. Once the first Shavuos after the wine has been manufactured, at that point there can be no guarantee about the quality of the wine because of the humidity. So, ask Tysus, if we just said that what's the case of our Mishnah is that's being poured into the barrels of the buyer, so even if it didn't last till Shavuos, why could the seller not say, because it was your barrels that ruined the wine? So Tysus answers that if indeed wine turns into vinegar, so then the seller could say to the buyer, it's your barrels that made the wine into vinegar. But here, we're not speaking about that. We're talking about wine that went down in quality. And in that case, it's still wine, but it lost its quality. And wine, if you agree to sell Yayim of Vusim, it has to hold on to its quality until Shavuos. Ritva says that even if we're talking about the barrels of the buyer, but if we're talking about high quality wine is not affected by being transferred into another barrel. And the fact that it didn't last until Shavuos, then it's a point that halacha is that the seller will be held responsible. And in fact, I saw the Ritva says that the situation here is that the buyer is telling the seller, I want wine that will last to Shavuos. So, indeed, the issue of our Gemara, says Ritva, is if it was wine that did not have the ability from the outset to last till Shavuos. But if the seller could prove that his wine can last till Shavuos, it was just the buyer's, something that happened because of the buyer, the seller would not be chayiv. If he tells him yayin, that he's selling him yoshan, old wine, the halacha is, it has to be minashtaket. It has to be from last year. If he says miyoshin, let the wine that's being sold was miyoshin, then it has to be wine mishal gimel shanim, three years. And again, says the Rasha, that if the wine is so old, why cannot the seller claim that it was the barrels or the conditions that the buyer kept the wine in that ruined the wine? And why should the seller be held responsible? So the Mashah explains, again, the distinction we said a minute ago. It's a difference if it goes down in quality or becomes vinegar. If it becomes vinegar, so then maybe the seller could say so. Here it didn't become vinegar. It's just not good wine. That's why the buyer has a claim. The Rashbam, however, says that no, what the buyer was saying is to the seller that you have to take the risk that if this wine gets ruined within 3 years, you will be held responsible. And if the seller took that risk upon himself, that's why the seller will be held responsible. Of course, the Rambam points out, as has been stated in many Mishnayos and Amasechta, that the discussion in this Mishnah is only in a situation where there's no minig medina. But if there's a specific minig medina in a place, or similarly, if the seller and buyer clearly indicated in their contract, in their transaction, what is or isn't included, then this wouldn't be a relevant conversation. Says the Gemara, Amar Rabbi Yossi b'Reb Chanina, our Mishnah that says that the seller, if the wine gets ruined, shall not be held responsible, only refers to a situation where it was put into the barrels of the buyer. That's where the seller could say, it was your kalim that ruined the wine. If it was always kept in the seller's vessels, amalei, the buyer could say to the seller, "Ha chamra v'cha kantkanach, this is all yours. And since it's all in your barrels, I certainly cannot be held responsible." And as the Rishonim point out, what is the point of the fact that was put into the barrel of the lokeach? The pouring of the wine from one barrel into another barrel could affect it. And therefore, even if the buyer could prove that he has new, perfectly fine barrels, it wouldn't make a difference. So ask the Ritva, why not? The Ritva says, when a seller buys wine, when a buyer buys wine from a seller, the seller knows that if he's not including the barrel, he's going to pour it. So what is he to do? Says the Ritva. And this is part of the way we've been explaining all of these Gemaras. Since there's a possibility that the pouring of the wine will ruin the wine, that's not the responsibility unless otherwise stated that the buyer took upon himself. However, the moment, explains the Rimigash, the wine was poured over. In other words, he's explaining our Gemara. Our Gemara just said that if it's in the seller's barrels, then the seller will be responsible. That's only if it was in the same barrel throughout. But if it was poured from one barrel of the seller to another barrel of the seller, the fact that it was all the seller's barrels won't make a difference. The pouring is going to put the wine into an issue. Ask the Gemara, even if it's talking about the barrels of the seller, why cannot the seller say to the buyer, you shouldn't have held on to the wine so long. You should have drank the wine right away. And that's why the wine got spoiled. So what's the difference if it's in my kalim or your kalim? So Rashba asked the obvious question. If I buy wine, is there an expectation that I have to drink up all the wine immediately? So the Rashbam says, in those days, that's what usually happened. When somebody bought wine, they didn't buy much wine. They bought as much wine that they needed to drink immediately, not because of all these concerns. The Rashba, however, says that indeed what happened here was that the Gemara's question is not that it should be drunk immediately. There's no expectation that you should have to drink a quantity of wine immediately. He drank it. This is enough time, it's a legitimate amount of time, a reasonable amount of time where a seller could say that you should have already have consumed all the wine and I should not therefore be held responsible. Answers the Gemara. Lo'tzricha, the Mishnah is speaking about a case, Damalei LeMikvah. As we've learned so many times in our Shiurim, there are two uses that they used to have for the wine. One was to drink the wine, and the other was to use it for cooking wine. And as we explained in our Shurim, cooking wine is usually held on to longer. It takes longer to use up the wine. So when the buyer bought the wine, he clearly indicated that that was what his intention was, and therefore the wine has to last for a longer time. And again, the way the Ritva explains the Gemara, that it's still in the barrel of the seller, because the Ritva suggests, in Pshat in this Gemara, as soon as it's in the barrel of the buyer, the seller has a legitimate claim, that's why it got ruined. Ask the Gemara, what forces Rabbi Yosef B'Chanina, looking at Masnissen, to explain our Mishnah that's speaking about Kanan, the lekeach, it's in the buyer's barrels. Udamalei lemikvah, he said, I want it for cooking. And that's why the wine was supposed to last longer. Look, maybe kankanen de meicher. Why don't we explain, we're speaking about kankanen de meicher, and say that in all situations, when it's in the kankanen of the meicher, then he's responsible, even if he didn't say lemikvah. Answers the Gemara, Amar Rav Masnisa Kishisa. There was a difficulty in understanding the Mishnah. The Ktani, the Mishnah said, "Im yidushai machnitz, if it's well known publicly that this wine that this seller's wine spoils every year, hareiz a mekachtos. Then it's considered a mekachtos. And why is it considered a mekachtos? Amai lemele. Why can't the seller say loybaylech lishuye? You shouldn't have held on to the wine. And if you wouldn't have held on to the wine that long, it would have still been good. El shmamina." How come that's not a legitimate claim of the seller in our Mishnah? Because our Mishnah obviously is referring to a situation, Damalei LeMikvah, that I'm buying wine for cooking, which as we keep on explaining, it has to last longer, and therefore he doesn't have that kind of a excuse. Shema Mina. So what we're learning here is that if it's wine that's not LeMikvah, the Ritva explains this. if it wasn't said that it's being bought for cooking, even though it's wine that isn't, even though it's, even if it was not known that it's bought for mikvah, and it's still in the meicher's kalim, it doesn't make a difference, because then the meicher always has the claim, you should have drank it quickly. But upligi, says the Gemara, what Rabbi Yosef Chanina says that our Mishnah is speaking about a case, would a buyer put it into his barrel? It's pligi Rabbi Chiba Yosef, disagreement with Rabbi Chiba Yosef said. Dom Rabbi Chiba Yosef, chamra mazal de marigar. He introduces a new consideration, that wine, the quality of the wine is dependent on the owner of the wine. Shnevav af kiyayim baga gever yohir. The taste of the wine is dependent on the person who's arrogant. And therefore, what the Gemara is saying is that if the wine spoils, the seller should not be held responsible. Even if it's in the seller's kalim, it doesn't make a difference. It's not the kalim that changed the quality of the wine. It's the owner of the wine that creates the quality of the wine. So I saw that the Mefarshim explained, Aida Alochi is that a mazal Yisrael. So if this person, even though he's a person that's not acting appropriately, why does his mazal affect the quality of the wine? So the Mefarshim explained that what is pshat of a person who's yor? What's pshat of a person who's arrogant? An individual who's arrogant is essentially declaring that he doesn't believe in HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So he has taken himself out of Klal Yisrael. A person who is part of Klal Yisrael, that's a person that doesn't have the mazel of Klal Yisrael. Another pshat, the Rashbam suggests that what is pshat somebody who's arrogant? A person who's arrogant is essentially declaring that what he has, everything that he has, is only because of his greatness. It's not connected in any way to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows him, look what's going to happen to your wine. Your wine is going to spoil because you think you're in control, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows him who's really in control. Amar Abari, hi man, you are somebody who's arrogant, afilu, ayinshi besa, lem kabel. Even his family, his wife, who's supposed to respect him, won't respect him. Shnamer geve yoa lo yinava. Maiv lo yinava, benovish lo. In his home, he won't have any respect. Amar Yehuda Marav, kalam is goy, betal shatamid chachamim, ve'ena tamad chacham. Somebody who puts on the talus that is usually worn by Talmud Chacham. I saw two pshatim. One pshat is that typically Talmud Chachamim would wear long clothing, and regular people wouldn't wear such long jackets, and he puts on the jacket of Talmud Chacham. Another pshat that I saw is the sudar. The hat of a Talmud Chacham was different than the hat that everyone else wore, and he put on that type of hat. Then the aloch is emachnisim, so he's again acting in an arrogant fashion. Emachnisim, I say the mechitzas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu won't be allowed in to the mechitzas of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ksiv hacha v'lo yinava, v'ksiv hasam al nevei kotshecha. Somebody who acts in such a fashion won't be allowed in to nevei kotshecha. Then explains the Reb Shmelkum in Nicholasburg. Now we understand why the Torah tells a metzora v'yeshiv chutzla olay shevis yamim, that the metzora sent chutzla machna. He sent away from his home because his family cannot live with him because the person is arrogant. I also saw a pshat that a person who acts in such a way is not going to have panosa, and he won't be able to bring panosa into the home. And if he's a person that acts that way, his family who depend on him for panosa will not be able to live with him. And the Yair Tavash says, if a person has the habit of acting in an arrogant fashion, they, even though there's a normally halacha that his family has to show respect to him. The halacha is that his family will not be, his family doesn't have to show him respect. And he says, the famous Gemara in Masechta Brachos, Daf Chav Zayin Amud Beis, teaches us that after they wanted to remove Rabbi Gamliel from the Nesias, from that position, they offered the position to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. And the Gemara says that Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's initial reaction was, Ezel ve'imlech ben Shebesi, I need to consult with my family. So what's pshat? So Yaris Tavash explains that we know Rabbi Gamliel was removed from the Nesias because he acted in a very strong fashion. And Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah thought to himself that maybe that's going to happen to me as well. And that's what's going to happen to me. It's not worth the whole position. So he said, who better than my wife knows if I'm able to control that even if I'm appointed, promoted to an important position, I will still remain I will still act not arrogantly. No one than my wife. And that's why he goes to ask his wife, do you think I could deal with this position? The Ben Yoyada explains, the Gemara said that he puts on a talus of a Talmud Chacham, the jacket of a Talmud Chacham, the hat of a Talmud Chacham. He says, what is wrong with that? So he says that when a Talmud Chacham speaks, a person, people listen. And if this person dresses like a Talmud Chacham, everybody's going to think that he must be a Talmud Chacham. And what's going to happen is, when he's really not a Talmud Chacham, he's going to cause people to listen to something that they don't have to listen to. He compares it to someone who says a Dvar Torah in the name of someone else who didn't say that Dvar Torah. And when you attach to that Dvar Torah the name of a great person who never said it, you cause people to listen to it. They don't recognize that they should listen. And I saw the Taras Chaim explains that the person who makes everybody believe who's a Talmud Chacham and isn't a Talmud Chacham is really in the category of sheker, of a lie. And as we've discussed in other shiurim, the Torah HaKadosh says, Midvash Sheker Tirchak, how much we have to be removed from sheker. And included in being removed to sheker is not causing people to think that you are who you aren't. And the Meiri writes that even a prominent person who's indeed worthy of prestige and honor, and he's supposed to act in a distinguished manner, still he has to be careful about arrogance, and particularly at home, he has to be very, very careful about not acting in an arrogant manner. He could maybe make an argument, points out the Meiri, that because of his position, because he needs people to show him respect, he's acting that way when he's not at home. But when he's at home, there is no explanation for that type of behavior. And since there's no explanation for that type of behavior, that's why the halacha is that's why the Gemara criticizes him. Says the Gemara, "Hi man, somebody gave wine to a storekeeper that's going to sell the wine, as a storekeeper sells the wine a little at a time. The talk of a pago pelsa, and the wine got spoiled when it's halfway through or third through. Dinu de makabu malay. The halacha is that the person who owns the wine has to take the whole loss, because." In the way the Rishonim explained, in this case, what happened was the buyer, he didn't buy the wine, he's just selling it on consignment. And since he's only selling it in consignment, that's why it's the wine that belongs to the seller and it's not his loss that he has to take. However, says the Gemara, it's only in a case where the Chanvani did not change the spigot through which the wine pours out. If he touched the spigot, then he can be held responsible. But points out the Yad Ramah, that's only in a case where the barrel had a spigot, and then he went and changed it. So then he's going to be held responsible because maybe by doing it, that's what ruined the wine. But if the barrel didn't start off with a spigot and he didn't have, and therefore he had no choice but to make one, he won't be held responsible. Furthermore, v'loimara al d'lemata yom d'shuka, where the market day did not come, al mata yom d'shuka loy, if that day came, the expectation is that he should have sold all of the wine by then. And if there's any wine that's left, then it's going to be on the Chanvani's responsibility. V'amarova, ha'iman de makabel chamra, somebody took upon him wine, adata de mamamte le leparza de zol shofet, that's going to take the wine to a city called Parvosa de zol shofet. V'adamate hasam, until the wine got the zol, the wine went down in price, dinahu de makabele, it's the responsibility of the seller, because the seller can't say to the buyer that you should have sold it earlier. He was given clear direction that he doesn't have to sell it. They should not sell it till he gets there. And as the Rashbam explains, as we spoke about in Masechta Bava Metzia, the case here is an iska where the buyer took responsibility. Where the buyer takes responsibility, half of it as a milva, as a loan, and half of it as a bekadin. And he takes, because of that, if it goes up, it's to his credit. If it goes down, it's to his credit. And here we're learning that even though he would normally take responsibility, but because he was given direction, don't sell it till you get there, the halacha is that way. Says the Rebbeinu Chananel that there is no difference if he's a buyer, between somebody is a buyer would have the same gemara, the same halacha. It doesn't make a difference if it was an iska or a buyer. So ask the Rashba, he doesn't understand Rabbeinu Chananel. Anybody who buys something, does he have a right to say that, well, if it goes down in price, I should be able to go back to the seller? Says the Rashba, as we're learning. Under normal circumstances, if somebody buys something and right after I buy it, the price of that item goes down, I have no recourse. Here, because this was included, that it shouldn't be sold until you get there, that's why the seller has to take on that responsibility. The Yad Ramah adds a knetch to this. The Yad Ramah says that speaking about a situation where the seller said, you won't even pay me until then. So since he didn't pay him until then, that's why he's not going to be held responsible. So Rashbam explains, the Parvasa de Zol Shofet was a place where wine was sold for a higher price. The Tosfos asks, in Masechta Bava Metzia, on Daf Gimel, Ayin Gimel Beis, the very masculine Parvasa de Zol Shofet, that there it seems to say that Zol Shofet was a place where wine was sold for a lower price. So Tosfos answers that Zol Shofet was in a place that was between a place where there was an abundance of wine and wine was sold inexpensively to a place where there was no wine and wine was very expensive. So Zol Shofet was right in between. So it was more expensive than other places, but less expensive than other places. The Nesivos points out that if it was clear when they made this condition that the person who's taking it, this iska, is going to be held responsible, and if Zol Shofet ends up being a place where the wine goes down in value, he will have to take a share in that loss. If that was clearly articulated, then of course he will have to take the loss. Zok to Gemara. They asked in the yeshiva, have a chalamai. What's the case if the wine didn't go down in price, but it spoiled before it got to Zol Shofet? And the Gemara's question is, do we follow the opinion of Yosef of Chanina, who holds that if somebody sells wine to somebody else, and it spoils in the barrels of the seller, the buyer could say, ha chamrach v'hakan kanach, take it all back, and therefore here too he could say so, and the seller has no right to say to him, so you shouldn't have the onto it, because the seller told him, don't sell it till you get there. Or maybe we follow the opinion of Chiya ben Yosef that says that if somebody sells wine to somebody else and it gets spoiled, the seller could always say, Mazlach Gairim. If there's a concept of Mazlach Gairim, do we say Mazlach Gairim only when I completely buy something? So then the seller could say, it's clear that it's your fault that it happened. But here the seller maintained ownership in here. And therefore, since he retained ownership, he should retain the loss. Amar Rav Hillel Rav Ashi, Kehavina by Rav Kahana, when we were in the yeshiva of Kahana, Amalan Cham Chalala. He said to us that if it turns into vinegar, then the halacha is that certainly the buyer at minimum is partially at fault. Loi Kribyos Bechanina. Vikdamri, afil chavin nam mikabel. On the contrary, if it turns into vinegar, then the seller takes the responsibility and says, the Gemara, that's consistent with Rabbi Yosef Chanina said. We learned in the Mishnah, if wine that was sold as yoshon, then it's wine from Mishtaket from last year. Tana, umiyashva ha'ilach arachag, that somebody says, I'm selling you yayim vashem. It's not enough that he should give him wine that's more than 2 years old. Also, he has to give him wine that will last till this year's Sukkos, because the wine was typically made Sukkos time. So he's giving him wine that can last until when he'll be able to get new wine, which is Sukkos time. Says the Maramachim, if somebody sells real estate to someone else with the intention that in those days, as we're going to learn the Gemara, the son, after he got married, continued living by his parents. They just added a room for this new couple. Or, as we just said, daughters typically did not live with their parents. But if the daughter, Nebuch, became an almana, so she comes back to her parents' home, but she needs her own room, so therefore, what is the dimension, if the contractor said, was hired to build such a room, what is the size of such a room? 4 by 6 amos to Rebbe Kiva. That's the size of a barn. And Pash Peshad Rebbe Shmuel saying that that isn't sufficiently large enough. If somebody wants to build a barn, it's 4 by 6. If somebody is contracted to buy bais cotton, a small room, what are the dimensions of a small room? 6 amos by 8 amos. If somebody took upon himself to build a gadol, a large room, the size of shmoina lesser. Somebody took upon himself to build a traklin, which is a very large room where people were invited to sit. There, it's esal asa. Ruma kachatzi orka kachatzi rechba. The Gemara spoke about the width and the length of the room. What about the height of the room? Says the Gemara, if, for example, we have a room that's 6 by 4, so the height will be half of 6 and half of 4, 3 and 2, and the height will have to be 5 amos. Rael Adavis says the Mishnah, where do we get this number from? From the Beis HaMikdash, Rav Shimon Gamliel Oymer could be in Heichel. The length of the Beis HaMikdash was 40 amos, the width was 60, half, so that's 40 plus 20 equal 60, and the half is 30, and that was the height of the Beis HaMikdash. Says the Gemara, why was it necessary for the Mishnah to tell us these two examples? Says the Gemara, listening, the Mishnah should have said, I'm building a room for my newly married son or daughter, or and I'm building a room for my son or daughter who are coming back to live in my home. Answers the Gemara, the Mishnah is coming to teach us, it's inappropriate for a son-in-law. It's inappropriate for a son-in-law to live in the home of his father-in-law, because typically there's a attraction, a relationship between a mother-in-law and a son-in-law, and therefore it's not healthy for a son-in-law to live by his in-laws. And therefore, since it's unhealthy for a son-in-law to live by his in-laws, it's when the son gets married, they live there. But the daughter doesn't stay in a parent's home, so the son-in-law shouldn't be in that home. As says the Gemara, K'riksiv b'Sefer ben Sira. The Sefer ben Sira was written by Yeshua ben Sira, who lived in the time of Shimon HaTzadik, and there are many strong stories and proverbs that, like there are in Sefer Mishlei. There's a machlokes in the Gemara Masechta Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Amud Beis. Is it considered part of the Sifrei Chatzonim that one shouldn't learn? And Rabbi Yosef's opinion is that it's considered from the Sifrei Chatzonim. So if it's considered one of the Sfarim Chatzonim, how's the Gemara quoting it? So the Rishonim will explain that what Rabbi Yosef means to say is that generally, it's considered a safe that one shouldn't study. But something that is appropriate, something that's smart, should be learned even from there. Says the Gemara, K'riksiv b'Sefer ben Sira, Dovish hakol shekalti b'kaf maznayim, I weighed everything, v'lemetzasi kal mesubin. I did not find anything lighter than the bran of wheat. And the Taras Chaim explains, why is it bran considered the lightest item? We would think that bran is something positive. It's connected to the wheat. So we say that we would think that maybe it's a good thing that a son-in-law should live by his in-laws. So the Gemara is telling us, just like bran is not appropriate, so too is a son-in-law living by his in-laws inappropriate. What is even less? A guest who invites another guest. So one would think that a guest telling about another guest is a good thing. He's saying that this person is a machnas oirich, but it's not for you to make that decision. And the other thing that's even worse, kalmi oirich, even worse than that is Hameshiv Dova B'Terem Yishma. He answers before he hears the question. Shnei Hameshiv Dova B'Terem Yishma, Evlosi L'Chloima, it's a mistake. So we said, the reason why son-in-law shouldn't live there is because of the special relationship that typically exists between a mother-in-law and a son-in-law. Another Pshat Rishonim suggests, as we often learned in Masechta Ksubis, that we know that there was Erisin, the Jewish marriage is two stages, Erisin and then the Suin, and therefore we shouldn't, during that period, the Chasen and Kala should not be living in the same home, because that is going to be inappropriate. So according to this, what's going to be halacha if they're already married? According to the first pshat, it wouldn't make a difference. According to the second pshat, it would be okay. Or in a case where there's no mother-in-law. If the concern is because of the kala, so it doesn't make a difference. If the concern is because of the mother-in-law, then there's no issue of a mother-in-law. Why point out the Rishonim? Bizman hazeh, are we not makbar on this? Says, because nowadays, it's a way to save money. Where the son-in-law will not have to, with a son-in-law, if they're doing it, that the son-in-law shouldn't have to pay rent, it's mutter. The Magid Mishnah says that if the couple have their own bedroom, it's not a concern. Another Pshat Demiri says that there was a time, as we just discussed, that the relationship between a mother-in-law and the son-in-law was something that we had to be concerned about. But nowadays, that there isn't that special relationship, so the whole concern fell away. Rameh Shapiro, the Lublin Rav, once met the Kedusha Tzi in the Bava Rebbe. And the Pasuk said, he asked him a question. The Rameh Shapiro asked the Bava Rebbe, then the Parashas Vayetze, when Yaakov says to Lavan, Havali Ishti, and Rashi says that the Loikal Shabakalim Enoim Akein. So Ramey Shapiro said to ask the Kedusha Tzion, why does Rashi pick the words Kal Shabakalim? So he answered, because Yaakov Avinu was a son-in-law that lived in his in-law's home. And our Gemara just said that a son-in-law who lives in the in-law's home is called a kala, as a called kal. That's why Rashi used the word kal. I saw that this is the reason when we speak about a kala getting married, it's called hachnosis kala. Why is it called hachnosis kala? Because the kala is hachnosis going into the chassan's home. And that's why the word became, this expression became hachnosis kala. Rishmal Amar Refes Bakizu. Rishmal said that the size of the room Rekiva spoke about is a barn. And I wrote to Lassus, and then he said the size of a barn is 4x6. Says the Gemara, how do we understand what the Mishnah said, this back and forth between Rishmal and Rekiva? Refes Bakim Man Ketanila. Ikdamis, says the Gemara, Ikdam Rishmal Ketanila. It was a Rishmal statement. V'ikdam Rav Kivik Tanila was a Rekiva statement. The Gemara explains itself. Ikdam Rav Kivik Tanila v'ach kamer. Afal pi sherefes bakihi. Even though the size of this room is the size of a barn, pam shadam oisad rasay breakfast baker. Sometimes people make their rooms that size. That so it turns out that everybody agrees that the size of a refes baker is 4x6. The machlokes between Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Kiva is: do people make a room for their couple that size? Ikadam Rabbi Shmuel katanila, but there's a different version. Vachkamer, one cannot suggest that somebody should make a room that size. She writes the last surface spoke is abam sosheish. That's the size of a barn. So according to Rabbi Kiva, the shear of a barn will be even smaller, and that's why it'll be good enough. 4x6 for Chas and Kala, because nobody makes a room the size of a barn for Chas and Kala. But Rav Kiva says that the barn is smaller, and that's why this room works for Chas and Kala. And Rav Shmuel says, no, this room is the size of a barn, and a Chas and Kala have to have a room that's bigger than the size of a barn. Traklin Eser Lesson, but we said a traklin is Eser al Eser. Ask the Gemara, my traklin. Says Mark Kuntibivardi. They used to have a room that had a lot of windows and roses for beauty. Tani the Cantor, somebody made a condition that you're gonna build me a room that's the size of a cantor. He has to build him a room that tarbits a pandi. It's a room where they used to where they had a foyer in the mansions, and that's what that room is. Ruma kechatzi arka vechatzi rachba. Raya l'davar shimon gemlilam kebiyin hecha. Says my raya l'davar man ketanila. How do we understand the Mishnah with this statement? Says the Gemara, ikad amri shimon gemlil ketani. The shimon gemlil who made the statement. Vach kamer. The statement was, raya l'davar menayin. That we said that the height of a room is half of when we put together the width and the length. Where do we see this? Not Rav Shimon Gamliel, Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, Hakel Kabinyan Hechel. That's the way the Beis HaMikdash was constructed. V'ikad Amri, Tanak Kama Ketanila. It was taught by the Tanak Kama. The Tanak Kama said that the height should be half of the length and the width. And he brought the Beis HaMikdash. And he said there's a Raya L'Dover. But he didn't say what is the Raya L'Dover. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Atmum Ektamilei, Vachkamer, Menayin, Raya minayin, where are you bringing a raya from? Mehechel, mebinyan hechel. So to which he says to the Tanakama, otikule alma binyan hechel avdi, are all rooms constructed like the Beis HaMikdash, that should serve as the model. Tanya chere oimrim, rachvay kekroisov. The width of the room is the same as the width as the beams that are put across the width of the helm. Ask the Gemara, so if that's the case, so that means the beams go along the width of the house. So why don't we just say, Ruma, the height, is equal to Rachbay, to the width. Answers the Gemara, Ibai Seyme Beisim Miloi Rovach. The way they used to build the walls, the Rishonim explained, is that the walls were narrower on the bottom and wider on top, because they made thicker walls on the bottom. So Gemara is telling us that when we think about the width of the room, look at it from the top, not from the bottom. The way they used to construct, the way they put the beams, is that on top of the walls where they were putting the beam, they would cut out a space that the beam should rest on. So it turns out that the beam is wider than the room, because the room is only the width of the room. The beam also has the width of the walls, and apparently in those days, the walls were quite thick, and the beams rested on top of those walls. So if we just said the width of the room, it would just be the width of the interior of the room. By saying the width of the beam, it's including the width of the wall. The width goes from the outside of the wall to the other outside of the wall, which is wider.